Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to Interchange. I am your host, Ryan Dawes. Tonight, we're talking about men and women and everything that lies in between and beyond these binary poles. While conventional habit divides all human into either men or women, boys and girls, sky blue or soft pink, action figures or dolls, many feel that the world is just not so simple. Two choices of identity just simply are not enough. Now, one such believer is Dr. Can McQueen, who has joined us here in WFHB Studios. Dr. Can has a PhD in educational psychology and also studies how society responds to those who don't necessarily fit into dichotomous expectations of man and woman. Dr. Can, thank you very much for joining us here on Interchange.
Thank you, Ryan. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So now you believe that there is much more beyond just man and woman. We need more than just two ways to identify humans when it comes to gender and sexuality. But before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the differences between what we call gender and sexuality, and then how that translates into our ideas of being transgendered or intersexed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, sex and gender, typically what we're talking about with those two terms is sex refers to the body and the anatomy, what it physically means to be male and female. And gender typically refers more to the idea of masculine and feminine, that social construct, how we're socialized to be male and female. And in Western societies, and most societies, although not all of them around the world, but most, we view both sex and gender as a strict dichotomy, and consisting of the mutually exclusive and collectively exhaustive categories of male and female. Mutually exclusive meaning it's held that a person can either be one or the other, never both at the same time. And collectively exhaustive meaning it's felt that all people on the planet can easily be classified as one or the other. And as a society, we're really committed to this idea. We get very nervous when people push these sex and gender boundaries. But like most things, it's just really not that simple. On the one hand, we have a population of people known as transgendered individuals. And transgenderism has been defined as an umbrella term that describes people who either permanently or periodically do not identify with the sex they were assigned at birth. To oversimplify that phenomenon, I'm a man trapped inside the body of a woman, I'm a woman trapped inside the body of a man. There's other ways it can manifest, but that's how we think about it. And then intersexuality refers to people who are physically ambiguous, people who are born anatomically, genetically, physically, in between male and female, not clearly either one. And this strict dichotomous paradigm that we're so committed to just doesn't have room for those two groups of people.
Room for someone who is either transgendered or intersexed or both.
Exactly, yes.
So then if two isn't enough, what then, how should we then adapt our speech and the way that we allow people to identify themselves? What then is that number?
Well, that's a really good question, and I wish I had the definitive answer for that. Right now, I think the best we can do is just start challenging our dichotomous expectations and start looking outside of the box a bit. Because the minute you say, well, two's not enough, we need three, then there's another one and another one. And the truth is, we human beings, we're just complicated, you know. We try to simplify and look at the world simply, but we're pretty complicated species.
Now, for diving into something that is so complicated, you obviously would have a stake or a personal incentive in this. Why are you passionate about this, and how has your growth throughout your life contributed to your passion in studying and changing the way we look at gender and sexuality?
Well, I am a transgendered person, and for me, that means that I'm in a female body, but I identify and feel male, and I always have. And it, you know, I'm happy to share my that story with you. It's we got to go back a ways, but I have a memory from my very early childhood. I'm going to guess I was probably about 3 years old, and I.
About as far back as most people can remember, regardless of what they're remembering.
Yeah. And I'm guessing I was probably about that old. But I was just stereotypically male in so many ways. The toys that I screamed for, the clothes that I wanted to wear. And, you know, if I was 3 years old, this would have been circa 1963. So the world was a very different place. And I was staying with my grandmother. I stayed with her a lot. Both my parents worked, and I loved my grandmother dearly and had a good time with her.
And this, I should mention, was in southern Indiana, right?
Yeah, I'm from Greene County, actually, okay. Just west of here. And that's where I was growing up. And, you know, I'm guessing I was about 3 years old, and my grandmother took me to a club that she belonged to, just a social club that I believe was run through the church where she attended. And I remember very clearly, it was a great experience because I was this little kid and there were all of these, you know, old ladies who were probably younger than I am now. But all of these ladies, you know, who would put me on their lap and make over me. And I remember going around and telling these ladies that I wanted to be a boy because that was my truth. That was just very true for me. And I didn't know there was anything wrong with that. It just didn't seem controversial to me. It was just kind of the way it was to
just
my
like
young
the
mind.
Way we declare what we want to be when we grow up. There's nothing wrong with it, no matter how crazy it is. As a kid, you just say whatever you want to be, and people
exactly.
laugh it off or encourage you.
Exactly. So I, you know, I was telling these ladies that I wanted to be a boy. And very soon after that, I'm guessing it was that evening, my mother had a conversation with me, and she said, I hear you've been telling people that you want to be a boy. And I said, yeah. And she said, well, you don't really want to be a boy, do you? You just like playing with boys' toys. And even at that young age, I knew the difference. I knew the difference between just liking boys' things and actually wanting to be a boy. And I said, no, I want to be a boy. And she said, well, that's not okay. It's okay if you like playing with boys' toys. But if you really want to be a boy, then I've got to do some things to make you okay with being a girl. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to get rid of all your toys, and you can only play with dolls. That's all you can have to play with from here on out, which I always hated and was never interested in. And she said, and we're going to have to change the way you dress. So you can never wear pants again. You're going to have to wear dresses all the time, which I absolutely hated. Even at that young age. And she said, we're going to have to let your hair grow, and you're going to have to wear ribbons in your hair. And your dresses can't be just any dresses. They've got to be dresses with flowers and lace, and because I have to make you okay with being a girl. Now you don't really want to be a boy, do you? And I said, uh-uh. No, not if that's what it meant, you know. Now, looking back on that conversation with my mother, I see there were two things that I took away from it. The first was a real understanding that there was something intrinsically wrong with me. Because even at that young age, I knew that if it wasn't okay to want to be a boy, then there was something very not okay with me. And that's a belief. That's something I internalized, and that's something that I carried with me for decades after that. And the second thing I took away from that conversation was an understanding that this was not an okay thing to talk about, even to myself. So what happened is, at that moment in time, I went into a very deep denial about this thing. And it was a long time before I ever acknowledged how I felt. That was pretty severe consequences for those feelings. And I just went into denial. Now, if you fast forward, probably about 35 years or so, I was at a place in life, I was about 40 years old, and I was at a place in life where I just was kind of struggling, kind of depressed, kind of anxious, not really feeling right in the world, but not knowing what was going on. And I did some things to try to get to the bottom of what was bothering me. And in the middle of that process, one evening, I was sitting on the edge of my bed tying my shoes when this voice out of nowhere in my head said very strongly, "I don't feel